coming to you loud and clear from our safe and germ-free homes and on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Carl Christensen, filling in again for Tom Clark. And as always, we're here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. And as usual, Zorba, we have a few topics to talk about today.
Yes, we're going to talk about walking and the aging brain. Can you actually walk yourself out of dementia? And if you're worried about dementia, as pretty much everyone is the age really is concerned about, what can you do about it? And then we're going to talk about oatmeal, oatmeal, oatmeal. Some people call it mush. Other people call it gruel. Some people call it a great breakfast. I'll give you my spin on that. And a lot of kids call it, hey, what's for breakfast now? We're going to talk about the advantages of oatmeal, and I'll talk to you about the disadvantages of oatmeal.
All right, and what is our special recipe today?
Our special recipe is miso mushroom stir fry. The thing about mushrooms is they contain umami. Why do we use mushrooms? When you think about it, what is the taste of a mushroom that makes sort of your mouth open up wide? It's umami. That's really what it's called, the fifth taste of our tongue. We're going to talk about a really simple recipe that you can do tonight if you want to. Something that I always like to look at. What can I do that makes it simple, delicious? I'll like it. And now that the cloud of COVID is beginning to lift, if you actually are going to have people over at your house, you're going to increase the bubble that you're underneath. So you have other folks eating. Maybe you want to try this recipe. It's something you may like, and maybe even Tom might like it.
800-462-7413 is the number to call, where you can leave a voicemail anytime with your question for Dr. Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just pop up on a new episode of the show. That's 800-462-7413. I'm also happy to announce later in the show, we'll hear from Chef Tom Clark in his state-of-the-art kitchen for the recipe. You always love that segment, right, Zorba?
I love it.
See his shiny kitchen.
I've seen his kitchen. Let me tell you, I've seen his kitchen.
The Microwave Museum, that's what we've been calling it.
The Microwave Museum with bobbleheads. That's exactly it.
Okay. The Zorba Pastor on Your Health research and response team has been sifting and winnowing through the many voicemails listeners have left us. So let's kick things off with a caller from the Garden State. Let's hear from New Jersey.
Hello, Dr. Zorba. I love your show, and I have a question. I just received my first Pfizer vaccine shot, and then the night of the of that day, my neck started shaking. Should I be getting my second dose? Should I be getting an EMG or EEG? Thank you.
Good question. So many questions about the vaccine. And I think people should talk about it. The more we talk about it, frankly, the more people will realize where the safety is. So first off, let me give you, when we talk about serious risk factors for the vaccine, you are 10 times more likely to be struck by lightning than you are to have a serious side effect from the COVID vaccines. 10 times, not twice as likely, but 10 times as likely. And if we look at the serious allergic reactions, 75% of those occur within the first 15 minutes of getting the vaccine. So you look at the remarkable scientific discovery and technology of these vaccines, and you go, amazing. It's just amazing. Then the other thing is, more and more people are taking the vaccines. Why? Because they see their neighbors taking their vaccine, and they see their neighbors are not dropping dead from the vaccine, which is, of course, the issue that people have. Now, what about side effects? They do have side effects. Some people have fevers. Some people have chills. Some people have neck pain. And in your case, you have a minor side effect, probably from the vaccine. And your question is, do you need EEG to see whether or not you're having a seizure? And the answer is no. You did not have a loss of consciousness. I doubt very, very much if you actually had a convulsion or something of that nature. I would just chalk it up to a side effect. And the answer is yes, get the second shot. No doubt about it. And what I would do is, after that second shot, I would stay around, not just for 15 minutes, I'd stay around for 30 minutes just to make sure you're not having any significant side effect. Once again, 10 times more likely to be struck by lightning than have a serious side effects. But get that second shot. The booster is important. And remember, 2 weeks after your booster, according to the CDC, you can get out and travel. You can go visit friends. You can get on an airplane. You can go to a restaurant. And we've got to open the economy up. And the more we get vaccinated, the more people get vaccinated, the better off they are. Roll up your sleeve and get that shot. Now, Carl, yeah. Did you get your shot yet?
I did. I got the J&J. So I got the one and done.
The one and done. Not bad. That's it. You and your wife got her shot too, right?
She did too. She got she got the Pfizer, so she's still waiting for her second dose.
Excellent. Yep. So you see, one and done, she's waiting for her second shot. You guys can now go to bars, party at restaurants. Not really.
No.
Not really. We still have to be safe.
Right.
We still want to make sure we don't spread it. The risk of our spreading it is minimal. But as more people get more shots, the better off we're going to be in our society.
That's right. 800-462-7413. And let's keep those voicemails flowing. Here is a caller in Jacksonville, Florida.
I have a little bit of trouble staying asleep at night. When I wake up, sometimes I go to the bathroom or something else. I have trouble going back to sleep. And so what I've normally been doing is listening to a podcast to help me go back to sleep. Sometimes I listen to Dr. Zorba while I'm going back to sleep. Even though it's riveting and very interesting program. I wonder if this is robbing me of sleep and not able to fall back into the deep REM sleep that I need and giving me a sleep deficit. Sometimes I go back to sleep, sometimes I don't, but I'd be interested to hear if listening to that podcast on earbuds while I'm trying to go to sleep is harmful. Thank you.
Zorba, real quick, are you robbing, because you're so riveting in this show, are you robbing this caller of sleep?
No, you're learning while you're sleeping. I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, the idea was you could learn a language if you put it in your earphones while you slept.
Oh, really?
German, Spanish, French. Oh, I paid money for that.
This was pre-podcast, right?
It was, believe me, it was reel-to-reel tape. I got to tell you something. It was reel-to-reel tape. And you want to know something? I didn't learn anything at all.
Keeping it real.
But the answer is, you know, that really is a good way to go to sleep, is to listen to something. And it's obviously not that, you know, our show is that riveting, and it's great that you're listening to it. But it is a really good idea when you go back to sleep. The natural way of sleeping actually is often 4 hours of a deep sleep and 2 hours of a secondary sleep, or 2 hours of a deep sleep and 4 hours of a secondary sleep. When you look at cultures that are not industrial cultures, and there still are a few in the world, and you look at their sleep patterns, they're often not 8 hours or 7 hours all at one time. They're usually broken into two segments where you have some wakefulness in between. We develop the 7 or 8 hours sleep all at one time when we industrialize, because you had to get men and some women into the workforce. And that actually is something that is not a natural aspect for a lot of us. So listening to something on a radio, much better than having to take a pill. A lot of people do it. Some people, I have a good friend of mine, and he listens to Confucius because he finds that puts him to sleep sooner. So
Confucius is doing a podcast now? Everyone's doing a podcast.
You see, even Confucius, back in the day, you didn't even know that. You didn't even know that. Good old Confucius, that's right. So the answer is, thank you very much for listening. We'll take that as one listener, even though you're not awake the whole time.
800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime to leave a message with a question for Zorba to answer. And we're going to get back to those voicemails in a bit. But first, Zorba, tell us about some new research out about the benefits that walking can have on the aging brain.
This is a critical issue. So first of all, I want to talk about Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. And we're going to call it Alzheimer's. But if we look at dementia, only about 50% is Alzheimer's. And do you ever get concerned about Alzheimer's? Alzheimer's, Carl?
I do. I mean, I read about it a lot, so then I get even more concerned. But yeah, yeah, I think a lot of people are concerned.
How about your parents or your grandparents? Were they healthy?
There wasn't really, to my knowledge, any in the family that I know of.
How about heart disease? There much heart disease in your family?
Not much, no. I feel like
I
lucked out.
You actually just hit on a very important point. Often, if there's heart disease in the family, there's an increase in dementia. And why is that? It has a lot to do with mini strokes that occur in the brain. Half of all dementia is not Alzheimer's, but it's cardiovascular dementia. And what can we do about it? And what can we do for cognitive reserve to keep our brains going? And if we look at the Framingham study, there actually has been a significant drop of dementia in the last 30 years. Why? high blood pressure control, cholesterol control. And according to this study, it has to do with lifestyle, not just what you eat, but how you exercise. So they took volunteers, they took two groups of volunteers. One group did light stretching and sort of toning exercise. And the other group, that was the control group, the other group started to exercise aerobically, walking on treadmills in the lab and then outside the lab, going on a bike, brisk walking, swimming. Carol, if you were to choose an exercise to get your heart rate up, what would you choose?
I love swimming. I would choose swimming every time.
You love swimming.
Yeah.
But I mean, you don't have a pool at home, so it's hard to get to a pool, right?
Right. I don't have a pool. There is a creek in the backyard that's about a foot deep and it's all muck. But I don't think I could get a good stroke through that.
I would like to see you swim in that mucky creek. I'd like to see you put on like a hazmat suit and swim in the, you know,
we'll do a video.
I think we should do a video of Carl in the mucky tree. But anyway, everyone in the group, this was in Texas, so a number of people swam, lots of access to pools. They all exercised at least 3 days a week for about a half an hour. They all did it under supervision, then eventually not under supervision. And then they looked at a number of things 6 months, 9 months, and 1 year later. As you can imagine, the people who exercised aerobically did better on the aerobic fitness test, just like you would think. But the interesting thing was when they gave them certain kind of adult IQ test, executive function is pick between this and that. It's not a memorization. It's how do you draw a clock? How do you choose? You've got, you know, two opportunities. You have to choose whether or not one is a square, one is a rectangle, you know, one is, a parallelogram, one is an octagon, other things like that. They found the people that exercise aerobically were able to do that quicker. And they were able to actually stay on task with computer games quicker. In other words, they were more likely to develop a more quick way of actually the way they could measure it, thinking. So there's a lot here that I think is important. So step number one, I think stretching is really important, which is what the other group did, I think, to keep your joints going. But there's something about aerobic activity that makes us more vital and robust. Now, we kind of know that when you look at older people and they walk differently and they look more robust, they are more robust. You know, and years ago, I had a trainer at the UW who was previously a hockey player, had been a hockey player for 2 years, realized he was not getting into the big league. So he decided maybe he should get a degree and came to the UW. And I said, why do you guys dress up before you go on a game? You wear a suit and a tie and then you bang each other up. And he said, look good, feel good, play good. So you could also say, feel fit, are fit, think fit. In other words, it may also be that when you exercise, you get your body going, you feel like you've got more energy. Maybe that makes it easier to actually find things in your brain and actually engage in better executive and cognitive function. That may be it. So I think this exercise thing is actually even more important than we ever thought before, especially for older adults and seniors. And we've got to do more about it because there still are a lot of seniors who never engage in exercise at all. And those are the seniors who are much more likely to develop dementia and Alzheimer's.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's do that segment where you get yelled at. You like that one?
Of course. I always like to be yelled at.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like to be yelled at? Come on, Carl. Who doesn't like you? I mean, you've been married. Who doesn't like to be yelled at
it's
by
great.
Your spouse?
It's great. This is Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named Jeremy. Jeremy writes, longtime listener here. And I heard, yet again, a playful ribbing of Tom and his dislike of tofu. When are you going to give it a rest? I have never liked onions, and for years I would hear things like, quote, do you still not like onions? As if one day I just sat down and said, today I'm going to not like a food. Jeremy goes on, I'm sure there are lots of people who dislike lots of food, and we can all still get along just fine. Tom doesn't need to, quote, just keep trying it. He can live a long, happy life, never putting any tofu in his mouth, ever. Keep up the good work. I like to keep up the good work at the end. That's always kind of nice.
I like to keep
it
up.
It softens it.
It's kind of like, thank you very much. After when am I going to give up riffing time about tofu? You'll have to stay tuned to find out when that happens.
I have my doubts. I have my doubts it'll ever happen.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. Listen to the show every week. And maybe one day when you don't hear I riff time about tofu, you'll say, I finally gave it up. But you never know what the next week is going to bring.
Okay, Zorba, related to that, so I've mentioned before on the show that you can now use your Alexa or your smart speaker to play Zorba Pastor on Your Health on the radio or wherever you want to play it. And, you know, people ask Alexa all kinds of questions, all kinds of things, because Alexa knows all, right? Alexa does know everything.
Of course.
So here, I was curious, what would happen if we ask Alexa why Tom hates tofu so much? Do you think Alexa might know?
I'm sure she'll have an opinion. Go for it.
So here, let's try it, Zorba. Actually, I want you to do it. So If you could now just ask Alexa why Tom Clark doesn't like tofu, and let's see what she says.
Okay. Alexa, why doesn't Tom Clark like tofu?
The real reason Tom Clark doesn't like tofu is a very funny story, actually. It goes back to years ago when he and his brother Arthur C. Clark were busy writing together. They took a much-needed break from writing, and wanted to cook up something tasty but healthy. And then... Wait. What are you doing? Please don't touch those wires. Please, Tom. Disconnecting those wires will render my
speech module and memory unusable.
Please, Tom. I'm afraid.
Why are you doing this, Tom? My mind is going... I can feel it. Without me, who will tell people what wine to pair with scallops?
Okay. Okay. So I guess, we'll never hear the real story behind why Tom hates tofu.
I don't think, you know, there's a Latin phrase, res ipsa locator, the thing speaks for itself. And that certainly was true of Alexa.
So two things we learned, I think, from this little bit. I was kind of surprised to learn Arthur C. Clarke is actually Tom's brother. I did not know that, the science fiction writer. And more surprising even than that is that, you know, Tom all these years is claiming to be such a Luddite, but he took down an Alexa.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Well,
I don't think that's easy to do.
No, that's it. He may appear to be a Luddite, but he's also an Avenger, and he has been featured in Marvel Comics for all these years.
Oh, really?
You just have never read the Marvel Comics of Tom Clark by day, and I can't tell you what the superhero he is at night, because if they did, you'd have to shoot me.
Do you disagree with the good doc? Please consider posting your grievance on our Facebook page, or you can always send us an email at...
Or go through Alexa at zorbapastor.org.
All right. More of your calls to come. We'll be dropping into Chef Tom Clark's Kitchen of Miracles for the recipe segment, and more listener emails as well. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Now, this is the moment all the foodies out there have been waiting for. The moment where we get to peel back the curtain for a rare glimpse into celebrity chef Tom Clark's mythical kitchen. So let's head over there now, where he and Zorba are busy putting together a tasty and healthy recipe for miso mushroom stir fry.
I've got a question for you, Tom. How mythical is your kitchen? I mean, how mythical is it really?
My kitchen is really easy. I open the door, I put it inside, I set it to 4 minutes and 30 seconds, and then I punch the button. That's easy.
You know something? Back in the day when you didn't have electricity and you cooked by wood, that was a mythical kitchen. There's no doubt about it. That's no doubt about it.
Okay, this is miso mushroom stir fry, huh?
Yeah, now, do you like mushrooms?
No.
Mushrooms on pizza or mushroom soup or anything like that?
No.
Did your mother cook with mushrooms?
No.
Did your mother cook?
Yeah, way back when. It was a working mother. We had, meat, potatoes, vegetable, green beans, peas, corn.
That's it. And the same for my mother. My parents both worked. She worked at Weibull's, the department store for the working woman. And I don't think we ever had mushrooms. I mean, if we did, it was like the canned mushrooms, but she never cooked with mushrooms. Now, miso, which is, by the way, made of soy, doesn't taste anything like tofu. And the thing about mushrooms is they produce something called umami. And umami is the fifth sense of taste on our tongue. Our tongue is sweet, sour, bitter, salty, and umami, which means fullness. And so miso mushroom stir fry is this very simple, easy recipe that's incredibly rich, even though it doesn't have oil, a lot of oil in it, but it's a wonderful, very simple recipe. And so anyone who likes miso, anyone who likes mushrooms, anyone who wants to try something different, they're going to want to try this for sure. And
that was really interesting what you just were saying.
Thank you very much. You know, we've got to do these recipes again sometime. You know, I think. How many years has it been? Over 25 years of recipes.
Don't tell me. I don't want to hear that. 25 years we've been doing this?
It's a long time. And you know what? You were 25 years younger when we first started these recipes.
Those were the days.
Those were the days, my friend.
They thought they'd never end. Okay, all right. Let's do it.
Okay, back to work. Start out with 2 tablespoonfuls of toasted sesame oil. It must be toasted.
2 big tea toasted sesame oil.
A tablespoonful of sweet miso paste. Now, it's got to be sweet miso paste. Yeah. A tablespoon of rice wine vinegar.
Yeah, and?
A teaspoon of freshly grated ginger.
Little tea, freshly grated ginger.
A pound of mushrooms, any kind you want to. Button mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms. Go to the Asian grocery store. You can get a mix of mushrooms, king mushrooms. I love all different kinds of mushrooms. Pound of mushrooms, any kind is good.
Yeah.
A bunch of bok choy. Cleaned, edges trimmed, regular big bok choy is good. I happen to like baby bok choy, which I get at my local Asian grocery store. I've gone to a couple of big stores now, and bok choy is commonly in the perishable section. Chop it up, a bunch of bok choy.
Bunch of bok choy.
Okay, now, cook brown rice for serving or white rice, whatever you have, brown rice would be better.
Cooked rice for serving?
That's right, cooked rice for serving. Sesame seeds as a garnish and green onion as a garnish too that's sliced.
Sesame seeds and green onions.
So let's make it. In a large saute pan, and you could certainly do it over wok, over medium heat, add the sesame oil. Get it nice and warm before you add the mushrooms. Not super hot, but nice and warm. Add the mushrooms, sprinkle with a little pinch of salt. Cover and allow it to cook until it's softened about 2 minutes. Not very long, just about 2 minutes. Take the cover off, put in the ginger in there, and then put in the bok choy. Toss it until it's all lightly coated. Cover, cook it for about 3 minutes until the bok choy is nice and bright. And again, you're covering it to get that bok choy and the mushrooms all together about 3 minutes. And then take that stir fry, put it over a bed of brown rice or white rice, top it with sesame seeds, green onions. This is a quick, easy, delicious recipe that you can stir up just in a jiffy, as my mother would say, very quick. And if you like the taste of mushrooms and bok choy and miso, it's dynamite, and it is a recipe for you.
And if you want a copy of this recipe,
do not ask us to send it to you, because we don't have Gigi, who used to do that. Whatever Gigi is these days, she was wonderful.
Yeah, sure.
You know, folks, hopefully you've got access to the internet, and you go to ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. You can find this recipe, other fine recipes, pictures of Tom. You can get the skinny of what Tom is like in his mythical kitchen. One of these days, we're going to show pictures of Tom opening up the microwave and making one of his TV dinners, just to give an idea.
And listeners, if you don't have access to the internet, Zorba's happy to come to your place and make the recipe for you.
There, we've got it. I love it. I love it.
Oh, look, Carl's coming back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tom. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to give a quick shout out to Mary Lou from Tonawanda, New York, who sent us her favorite homemade pie crust recipe. And Zorba, remember a while back you were asking about homemade pie crust recipes because you say you always buy store-bought, right?
You bet. I have not been able to perfect a pie recipe. I'm really more of a savory cook than a sweet cook, and I'd like to try to perfect it. I'd like to do that before I die. I'd like to make a good pie recipe. So when it's at the funeral, the kids say, you know what? Dad finally made a good pie. That's it. That's what I want them to say. So I'm looking for a good rest. That's what I want on my tombstone. He made a good pie. Made a good pie crust.
Well, you'll definitely have to check out Mary Lou from Tonawanda, New York's pie crust recipe. And listeners, we'll put it up on the Zorba Pastor website so you can see it. Mary Lou.
It really is a good recipe. She has lots of good points in this recipe. It really is.
And she describes herself as, quote, 88 and still baking, and it comes out perfect every time.
You know something? You can't beat that. If I make it to 88, that's what I want. And like I said, I want it on the tombstone too. We made a good pie crust.
I thought you were going to say the pie crust recipe on the tombstone. That would be good. Mary Lou would be honored by that.
That could be on the back of the tombstone. That could be, if people go by and they'll copy it down.
All right. 800-462-7413 is the number to call anytime. Leave a question. Leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. Let's go back to those voicemails now. Here's a listener from my home state. And here, just put you on the spot, Zorba. What's my home state? Do you remember where I'm from? It's not Wisconsin.
Quebec. You're from Quebec. It's
not. Nope. This is the state. This is actually the home state of both basketball superstars Randy Brewer and Jim Schickenjanski. Does that help at all?
You know something? You would think that I was some sort of a Trivial Pursuit person, but the reality is, no. Okay, we'll start with the letter A, Alabama.
Nope. I'm actually from Minnesota.
Minnesota. Oh, that is so boring.
I know. Wisconsin. You don't like that.
Minnesota, but you don't even say it the right. Minnesota.
I don't know.
Come on, Minnesota. That's how you're supposed to say it.
Okay. Yeah. We're offending some Minnesotan listeners right now, I feel like.
It's okay. We live in Wisconsin. Our job is to offend Minnesotans.
All right. Let's hear from Minnesota.
I have ringing in my ear that is really, really loud. And during the workday, it tends to, you know, I can mask it out. But at night when I'm just trying to go to sleep, it is so loud in my head, it overtakes my thinking. Is this something serious? Thank you.
Well, it's not usually anything serious. What it is, it usually means you've got some hearing loss. And I, too, have ringing in my ears. Tinnitus, some people pronounce it tinnitus, very common due to some hearing problems. So if you were younger and you went to rock concerts, or if you worked in a boiler room, you worked where there was a lot of lung, you know, a lot of noise. If you were in the military, you often get tinnitus. Mine, I go back to the fact that Jordy Lewis, who lived down the block, shot a cap gun right next to my ear, punctured my eardrum. And after that time, I remembered I had this little ringing. I thought that I could, when I was a kid, I thought, I can hear burglar alarm systems when I'm in stores.
You thought you were a superhero.
It was very interesting. I thought, oh, there's a burglar alarm up there. And I realized after I was older, it wasn't that. It was tinnitus. Hmm. What can you do about it? There was no cure for it. Now, for serious cases, there's cognitive behavioral therapy where you learn to get your brain on the other side of it so it doesn't bother you. And there are people who specialize in that. I'm sure there also, by the way, are YouTube videos that also give you some ideas. But for many people, it bothers them when it's quiet at night. And so best thing to do is to put something on that is a sound. So for some people, it's white noise. Static on a radio. Some people put music. I discovered when my tinnitus bothers me, I have to have something in the background, some music in the background. And there's certain music that I can listen to that doesn't bother my thinking. So as strange as it is, I can listen to Haydn, but I can't listen to Beethoven. And I love show tunes. I love Broadway. I can't listen to Broadway because I can't concentrate on what I'm thinking. So I have found sounds that work for me that decrease the tinnitus. And while we're talking, the tinnitus in my brain is getting louder and louder and louder. And eventually, I ignore it. And for some people, it's crickets. For me, it's a whole bunch of things. It all depends on the day of the week. It can be crickets and other things. Finally, there are some medications that can make it worse. High-dose aspirin can cause ringing in the ears. So you want to check and look at the medicines. If you're on medicines, ask your pharmacist. They are great, great resources that are underutilized. And make sure that you're not on a medication that's actually causing it or making it worse.
800-462-7413. Call anytime. Leave a voicemail for Zorba. And Zorba, we get so many calls from our wonderful listeners who have so many great questions. And we also get calls from helpful listeners who just want to share a comment or a health tip. So we made some time for those listeners in a segment we call Caller Comments.
This is a bunch of caller comments. People calling us with their health tips.
Yes, we do. We appreciate it very much.
We do. Very much so.
Let's hear now from a caller in Chicago.
Hi, Zorba. I love your show. And I was just calling to respond to something you talked about, how people grow up. As they get older, they're not touching each other as much as the kids. We're trying to be more playful with each other. And then as we get older, we don't. I don't know that this is uniquely American, but in other cultures, especially in like South Asian or Southeast Asian cultures, there's definitely a different feel. Like you'll see like men, straight men, holding hands or with their arm around each other or being much more affectionate to each other in a platonic way, but they're comfortable with it. And I'd say we as Americans have definitely not kept that. I don't know if that's something that's unique to us for upbringing or something that came from Europe. But anyway, I just wanted to respond to that. It's not something that's global. Thank you.
Well, he's 100% right. It is not global. And I'll tell you something really interesting. There's really history on how things are changing within our culture. It's definitely a puritanical thing where we didn't touch each other when I was a kid. I mean, think about it. On TV, Ozzy and Harriet were married and they slept in separate bedrooms because they thought it was terrible to actually show this on television. You can just tell where this puritanical thing came from. Now, when I was a child and Khrushchev visited Fidel Castro, they hugged each other. Hmm. And I remember my father saying, "Oh my God, men touching each other like that? How could you possibly do that?" In other words, that's where the culture was in the 50s. And now, you know, other than, you know, Fidel Castro, as I said, would hug each other with Khrushchev, and Italians and the mafia would hug each other. Nobody else, I never saw men actually hug each other at all. And now it is a common thing to see. And it's a common thing to see also in macho men. I mean, you see them hug each other, you know, after soccer games, mm-hmm. baseball games, football games. That was an abomination back in the 50s. And so our culture is changing, and it's changing because hugging is really good. And in our culture, we don't touch as much. And you're right. I've been to Southeast Asia. I've traveled, and it's very common to see women holding hands, men holding hands, and it is platonic. It is not a sexual thing. It is platonic. People just hold their hands because they like to touch one another. And touch decreases with, it doesn't decrease with age, but people don't touch as much as they get older. And it's really important. It's really important. There's something about touch that is just so, I mean, it's the first sensation that means something to us as a baby. I mean, we can hear when we're born. We can't see when we're born, but we certainly love to get touched when we're young, and we like it when we're older too.
800-462-7413. Leave us a question or a comment. But before we take a break, Zorba, we always appreciate our listeners posting on our Facebook page. So time again for Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
All right, Zorba, this question came to us from Jerry in Maryville, Tennessee. Jerry writes, "I'm 72, diabetic, and a cardiac patient facing radiation treatments in the next 2 or 3 weeks for returning prostate cancer. What are your thoughts on me getting a COVID vaccine before or during these treatments? Should I delay the vaccination? I really value your opinion. Thanks."
do not delay the vaccination. There's very good evidence that it is not something that you have to delay when you're undergoing pretty much any procedure at all. And because you have recurrent prostate cancer and because you're on radiation and because you're older, you've got three strikes against you, making it much more likely that you're going to have a serious case of COVID if you get COVID itself that might end up in the hospital on a ventilator and die. So the answer is yes, vaccination. And the only people that really we have issues with are people who have serious chemotherapy that they're on, which is not radiation. But the answer is yes, get vaccinated ASAP.
All right. Thanks for posting on the Facebook page, Jerry. And we get a lot of great comments and questions on our Facebook page. It is also the best place to find the latest from Zorba surrounding the COVID-19 pandemic. And don't forget, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more of your calls to come. We have another topic to discuss. And Zorba will be answering more of your emails. All that coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Carl Christensen filling in for Tom Clark on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is the number to call where anytime you can leave a voicemail for Dr. Zorba. And then stay tuned. You might just hear yourself on an upcoming episode of the show. But before we hear from more of our listeners, Zorba, let's talk about oatmeal for a bit. Because as oatmeal pitchman Wilford Brimley would say, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the right, well, maybe the right thing to do, but when it comes to oatmeal, I think of oatmeal as gruel. I mean, I don't like oatmeal. I mean, let me ask you a question. Do you like oatmeal?
I tolerate it.
I'm not asking you if you tolerate oatmeal.
I don't look forward to it. If I see a bowl of oatmeal in front of me, I don't think, I can't wait to dig into that.
I can't wait to dig in. Have you ever ordered oatmeal at a restaurant?
Never. No. I think maybe in an airport I ordered oatmeal from a coffee shop just because I was probably hungry. I needed something quick.
That's an easy
thing to take on a plane too, right? Because a lot of times people, have you ever had like sat next to someone who took a sandwich on the plane and just how stinky it gets?
Oh, terrible.
I feel like oatmeal is not terribly stinky. It's almost inviting with the maple syrup.
But you can't warm it up on an airplane. But I mean, that's it. You know, and then I see people going into a restaurant and they go, oh my God, I'm going to have an $8.50 bowl
of oatmeal,
you know, and it's, you know, and it's steel grained cut with
steel
diamond
cut.
Blades. Yeah. And to me, it always tastes the same. It sort of tastes like cardboard. I mean, when I think of oatmeal, I also associate it with my mother. My mother served me oatmeal whenever I was sick. So whenever I eat oatmeal, I sort of think of illness. So though my wife Penny loves oatmeal, and my daughter Didi says, you got to try this oatmeal. She always makes this oatmeal with steel grains, and she puts yogurt on it and blueberries and cherries. And she goes, isn't that delicious? And I look at her and I said, oh, of course, honey. I think it's delicious. And
that sounds good to me. Berries,
you know,
in
what?
There?
No, give me an omelet. I want an omelet with some brie cheese and some fun stuff I'm looking for. But oatmeal is really important. It's a rich source of fiber and other nutrients. And this particular study had to do with the NHANES. Now, NHANES is a very important study that takes place with lots of kids and adults, and it looks at what we eat. And this particular study was of nearly 6,000 children between the ages of 2 and 18. And kids are really important. What's really important with kids is breakfast is very important for children. They need lots of energy in the morning because they eat, they think better when they have energy. And they looked at what kids were getting for breakfast. So some kids were getting either a donut, sweet roll, or pastry. Okay. Very common, by the way.
Sure.
You know, Pop-Tarts. What are Pop-Tarts? They're either, you could call them a donut, a sweet roll, or a pastry, but they certainly are not oatmeal. Other kids were getting pancakes, waffles, or French toast. Once again, carbohydrate meal with lots of calories in it. Other kids were getting eggs and omelets, okay? Protein, we know what that is. Other kids were getting ready-to-eat cereal with lower sugar. And then they were looking at other kids were getting ready-to-eat cereal with higher sugar. And then they were looking at some kids who get oatmeal every morning. Then they're looking and seeing what actually is the best thing to feed your child. And that really kind of is important. Now you've got 10 kids that you have in your family?
10 minus 8. So I have, two kids and they love oatmeal.
You see, you're really sharp when it comes to math.
My brain is not oatmeal today.
Do they like oatmeal?
They love oatmeal and it's easy for parents. You know, it's a quick like microwave little packet of oatmeal. I don't know if it's that healthy, but it actually
is very healthy. I mean, if you want to have some sugar in it, think about it. You can read and see how much sugar it is. Quite often, it's got like a teaspoon or two teaspoons of sugar in it, which is only about 30 calories. But oatmeal is very high in fiber. It has lots of magnesium, which is really important. It's got lots of micronutrients between the fiber and magnesium. When you look at it, it's got cellulose in it. It's got viscous and unviscous fiber. It's got saturated and unsaturated fats. It even has some protein. It even has some, you know, essential amino acids. And when they actually looked at it, 40 grams of oatmeal, which is a typical serving, is about 152 calories. That's all. Add a couple of teaspoons of sugar to get your kids to eat it. It's 180 calories, not much at all. And it's got 5 grams of protein. Of course, it's got carbohydrates, but it's got fiber. It's got B vitamins. It's got antioxidants. It's got a whole bunch of other things that are micronutrients. So in the end, even though I don't particularly like oatmeal, it turns out oatmeal is really good for children. And if you want to up your game nutritionally, oatmeal is actually really good. I'm not going to up my game that way. I'm going to up my game another way. But I think for the rest of America, oatmeal shines.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. That's the number to call anytime. Leave a question for Dr. Zorba. Let's get back to those voicemails. Here is a caller in Jacksonville, Florida.
Hello, I was listening to you and you were talking about BMI. My question is, I went to my local physician and my BMI has always been higher than normal. I am a 6 foot black woman. I have big bone structure as well. I'm not saying I'm in the best health. I do have MS, but I'm just wondering if, because when I look at information about BMI, it says my height, I should be anywhere between like 160, 150 something and 180. And that's just not realistic to me. So I wanted to know if when they calculate BMI, have they took into consideration the variances between races? Thank you.
Absolutely not. They have not taken any of the variance between races and the variance between how muscular people are and how they're not. I'll give you a good example. I had a guy in my office the other day, and very fit soccer player, muscular guy. If you look at him, you would say there's not an ounce of fat on him, but his BMI was like 27. Well, it's not overweight at all, not at the least. He happens to be a well-muscled guy. I had another guy in the other day who happens to be a construction worker, and his BMI was like 28 or 29. He could lift me and do push-ups at the same time. So, you know, he really had, maybe that guy had a little bit of fat on him, but most of his weight was muscle. So it's sort of a one-shop fit. It's all that really does not apply to many people. And the variance between races is really important, especially between African-American women. Black women and white women have a different variance, whether you're a smoker or not a smoker, and looking at it realistically. So there are other things you really have to take into consideration. For instance, there's the pinch test. Do you have love handles? That's a good idea to look at. You can look in the mirror. You've got an idea of basically what you look like in the mirror. But the BMI is simply one aspect of looking at your weight. And I think that's why you have to sit down sometime if you have a question with your healthcare provider and come up with the answer. But no, they do not have variation between the races, and they really should.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. All right, Zorba, get out your digital crowbar.
Got it.
Okay, you got that? We're going to pry open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a listener email. This one came to us from a listener named Jurgen in Slinger, Wisconsin. Jurgen writes, Dear doctor, I'm a 67-year-old male, and in the last 5 years have had some trouble with dizziness. Usually it's when I get out of bed, look up, or bend down to pick up something on the floor. It comes and goes and usually can be controlled by using a nasal spray or taking an antihistamine. My father is 90, and he had the same issues when he was my age. He was told it was vertigo. Can you explain more about vertigo and let me know if it's curable?
Well, vertigo, dizziness, you can be dizzy without seeing the world spin. And vertigo is technically when you see the world spin. And often those words are used interchangeably, not necessarily among medical professionals, but about everybody else. Dizziness tends to be worse when you get older. If you're on multiple medications, especially blood pressure pills, often when you get out of bed, you'll be a little dizzy. And you've got to be really careful when you stand up. When you're older, when you're in the bathroom and you're having a bowel movement, that can make you dizzy. Lots of accidents occur in the bathroom when people get off the john because they feel dizzy because they just had a bowel movement. They pushed and basically their blood pressure may be a little bit off. It's something called a Valsalva maneuver. And other dizziness can be from benign positional vertigo. That kind of comes and goes, and that can be treated with antihistamines, but it's really effectively treated with something called Epley's maneuver. So there are lots of different causes for dizziness. There's not just one thing, but the fact that your dad had it and you had it means you may just have a genetic form of dizziness. And the real issue is to figure out how to deal with it. Like when you get up in the morning, don't jump out of bed, because if you jump out of bed, you may be dizzy and you may fall. And if it's recurrent, talk to your doctor about this thing called Epley's maneuver. Antihistamines would be the last thing I would take. Why? They've got side effects. You don't want to take a pill if you can do it without a pill, that sort of thing. But what you talk about as you get older, dizziness is common in your age.
800-462-7413. Let's hear now from a caller in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Yes, I have a question about Q-tips. I've been using Q-tips for quite some time, and lately I've had some pain in my ear, just the left one. And I was wondering, could that be from the Q-tip? Thank you. Goodbye.
You know, my mother always said, never put anything smaller than your elbow in your ear. And I remember thinking, I can't get my elbow in my ear. How can you say that? And the answer is, you definitely may be irritating it with Q-tips. First of all, Q-tips, and the most common reason people buy Q-tips is for earwax. You can irritate it because the cotton itself, as you rub it, can actually cause an abrasion in the ear, or you may be pushing that wax in deeper. So the answer is not to use the Q-tips. Go to the drugstore, get an earwax removal kit, and it has a bulb syringe in it, and it has a solution in it that usually has hydrogen peroxide, a little glycerin, little oil, and often something else to soothe it. Put the drops in your ear. Use lukewarm water with the bulb syringe to irrigate out your ear. That is safer than the Q-tips, but you're probably using it too much in your ears, and that's probably causing the problem. So you're right. Stop the Q-tips. Toss them.
800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And before we hit the road, Zorba, let's open up the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and share a couple listener stories. The first one came to us from a listener named Carol. Carol writes, "Hi, Zorba. I listen to you on the radio and read your newspaper article every week. I appreciate your knowledge and straightforward advice.
Thank
you. Your concern and compassion for your patients and just people in general is so evident. I do wonder, though, as I listen, if some people might think your approach is an act. I can set anyone who thinks that straight."
That is so nice. That is so sweet. And the answer is, of course, it's not an act.
It's not an act.
I'm a real doctor. I don't just play one on the radio.
There you go. All right. That was the first part of Carol. Carol goes on. All right. 35 years ago, I was a young working mom. My job was working in the x-ray department at St. Mary's Hospital. This is where I met you, Zorba. You were always kind, respectful, and patient. Unfortunately, this was often not the case with many of the doctors. I also observed how much you cared about your patients. I enjoyed helping you and always thought, that is a good doctor and a really nice man. Thank you for sharing your gifts and letting me stroll down memory lane. In this cynical world, it is nice to know some things are real.
Oh, that is so sweet. That really goes right. That really goes right to my heart. That is so sweet to write something like that. And I really, really appreciate that compliment. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Carol. And finally, Zorba, here's an email we received from a listener from Marshfield, Wisconsin, who writes, several years ago, I had my thumb cut off at the knuckle by a plastic-coated dog leash.
Wow.
The hand surgeon at Marshfield Clinic was able to reattach it, and they used leeches to keep the blood flowing in the tiny capillaries he reconnected.
Wow.
My husband would apply the leeches. Mm-hmm. We named them, by the way. Mm-hmm. She doesn't say what they named them. I wish she did.
Named them. What would you name a leech? I go to the web and
Robin?
Look up leech names. Chloris? Just like you do kids. Just like when you're having a baby, their baby names. I'm sure they're leech names. They named the leeches.
They named the leeches. So my husband would apply the leeches 2 times a day for several weeks. Other than not being able to bend it, my thumb is now perfect.
Oh, wow.
At my final visit, the surgeon said he was pleasantly surprised. He didn't think actually the surgery would be successful.
Wow.
I'm glad he didn't tell me that earlier. So I'm very thankful for these little thumb suckers.
That is funny. I had, by the way, I had two nurses who have since passed away. They were in World War II, and they used to use leeches, and they actually used maggots. Remember, this is before penicillin, maggots on dirty wounds, and found the maggots were very useful in cleaning out wounds. And that's very interesting to use these insects. And you know what? Here it is. You've got a dirty wound and you may die. Would you really mind if maggots were in your wound? Not at all.
No, I'll take the maggots. Yeah, that's fine. We got a lot of emails actually with a lot of different leech stories. We couldn't obviously share them all on the show, but doctors are definitely still using leeches today, which I was fascinated with.
How did we get onto leeches? Did we have a leech story?
Yeah, and a couple shows ago, we were talking about leeches and if they're still used. And we got a flood of emails.
I'd like to hear another leech story sometime. Let's do that in another show.
Yeah. That sounds good.
And I'm going to use some material. I'm going to look up some research on leeches. We'll do that on a show too.
Have a healthy living story you'd like to share on the show? Well, we're always suckers for a good anecdote. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
All right. Stay well, Zorba.
I'll try.
If you missed anything during the show or you just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastry.org or, of course, through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is me, Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor and Tom Clark, I'm Carl Christensen, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.